When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Sin City Stories contains explicit content that may be disturbing to some listeners, including strong language, graphic details, and depictions of violent crimes. Listener discretion is advised. In the spring of 1980, headlines across the United States screamed out, "Angel of Death." These sensational stories centered around a 32-year-old nurse working the graveyard shift in a Las Vegas ICU. And these articles about the so-called death angel carried a distinctly Vegas twist. Word was this nurse was running a hospital dead pool, placing wagers on when patients would die. But how did a mild-mannered nurse, who described herself as being shy as a mouse, end up in the national spotlight for allegedly murdering her patients? Since its founding on May 15, 1905, Las Vegas has gone from being a small railway stop in the middle of the Mojave Desert to a glittering neon oasis of gambling, shopping, fine dining, and entertainment, welcoming tens of millions of visitors from around the world every year. Through its relatively short history, the city has been witness to over a century's worth of murder, robberies, arson, and mayhem. And that's what we're here to share with you. In collaboration with mayheminthedesert.com, this is Sin City Stories, Vegas True Crime, the sordid tales behind the stranger-than-fiction history of fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Janie Adams' slight stature belied the rougher side of her personality. Janie had a reputation for being high-strung and blunt, but she also won over her coworkers with her innate aptitude. Janie had started her professional life as an English professor at Clemson University before turning her attention to nursing. She obtained her nursing license while living in Tucson, Arizona, and moved quickly up the ranks of her profession in that city before relocating to Las Vegas in 1978, where she assumed a supervisory role at Sunrise Hospital. Janie started on the night shift, where she developed a reputation around the midnight staff of the intensive care unit for frequently employing dark humor, or gallows humor, to help ease the tension. Things were often quiet on the overnight shift, and while Janie and her coworkers passed the time playing cards, it wasn't uncommon for Janie to joke about which of the critical patients clinging to life in the ICU she would kill next, jokingly dubbing herself the Angel of Death. Such comments were gruesome when taken out of context, but were an understandable way to get through the day in a job where death was an inevitable day-to-day occurrence. Unfortunately, when dark humor is mixed with gossip and local media looking for a sensational story, it can be an explosive combination. Vincent Fraser, a 51-year-old lawn sprinkler repairman, was admitted to the Sunrise Hospital ICU with a case of liver failure in January of 1980. Janie acted as supervising nurse during the graveyard shift while Fraser lingered on life support for 2 months. Like many critical patients, Fraser's vital signs ebbed and flowed, with Janie staying true to form and cracking jokes with her coworkers as Fraser deteriorated. Vincent Fraser passed away in the early morning hours of March 3, 1980. And this would be the end of the Janie Adams story, were it not for the fact that there was a new face in the ICU at the start of the graveyard shift on the night of March 2, 1980. Barbara Farrow had worked for years as a nurse at Sunrise Hospital, but had little prior interaction with Adams, since she ordinarily worked in a different unit on a different shift. But Farrow had just been transferred to the graveyard shift of the ICU, and the first impression Janie made on Farrow would thrust the young supervising nurse and her gallows humor into the national spotlight. The first bit of culture shock for Farrow, who was accustomed to the bustling hum of activity on the day shift, was witnessing her colleagues on the graveyard shift whiling away the time by playing cards. There just wasn't much to do in between making the rounds and administering medication, and given their patients were usually attempting to sleep, the nurses and orderlies on the night shift settled on a quiet activity to stave off boredom. Plus, the hospital was a ghost town during the late hours, the only sounds being the rhythmic beeps of the machines monitoring vital signs echoing from the patients' rooms. When one of those rhythmic beeps changed in Vincent Fraser's room, Farrow went to check and reported back to Janie that Fraser's vital signs were worsening. Janie responded by sarcastically asking, "Isn't he gone yet?" Farrow was stunned at the response, and Janie didn't help matters when she added, "Don't worry, we'll take care of him tonight." Sometime that evening, another patient passed away, 85-year-old accident victim Marion Bartlett. After Farrow made Janie aware of that elderly patient's death, Janie quipped, "I just killed off another one. Well, you know what they call me, the Angel of Death." Later that night, after Farrow had notified Janie of Vincent Fraser's deteriorating condition, sometime between 3 and 4 a.m., the unconscious lawn repairman's heart gave out. Upon being informed of Fraser's death, Adams commented, "Well, if anyone can get rid of a critical patient, it's me." Farrow overheard these comments and either truly believed she had just heard a murder confession or had decided she could use Janie's grim commentary to remove a coworker who she found objectionable. Regardless, on March 6, 1980, Farrow reported her concerns to the city attorney of North Las Vegas, who referred her to the Clark County District Attorney, Bob Miller. The district attorney's office coordinated with the police and coroner's office to quietly investigate six recent deaths at the Sunrise Hospital ICU that were deemed potentially suspicious, despite the initial medical reports indicating the critical patients had died due to the ailments which led them to be admitted to the ICU in the first place. No one knows if the district attorney's investigation would have closed without incident or if charges would have been sought had it not been for an explosive report by one of the two leading newspapers in Las Vegas. On March 13, 1980, the front page of the Las Vegas Review-Journal blared, "Vegas police probe Sunrise Bet deaths." The reports included allegations of a hospital dead pool that took wagers on when patients would die, with the heavy implication that a nurse was killing patients to gain an advantage in the odds.
The bombshell report traveled across the wires and became national news.
And in the city of about 450,000 people, there was a demand for action in response to the report of a so-called death angel lurking the corridors of one of the Vegas Valley's preeminent hospitals. Sunrise Hospital was taken by surprise at the allegations. Cameras and reporters swarmed the halls of the hospital hours after the story broke. In the aftermath of the news, five members of the graveyard shift ICU staff were immediately suspended with pay pending the conclusion of the DA's investigation. Despite initial concerns over damage to the hospital's reputation in light of the death angel reports, there was never a noticeable decline in patients seeking treatment at Sunrise. There was, however, a cascade of calls to the police from relatives of those who had passed away in the Sunrise ICU in recent months to inquire whether or not their family members may have fallen victim to the death angel. Janie Adams was soon identified as the alleged Angel of Death, which led to suspicions being raised about the role that may have been played by her live-in boyfriend, Sunrise Hospital respiratory therapist Bernard Dieters. Las Vegas police brought Janie in for questioning, where she allegedly sat in stunned silence staring at the wall of the interrogation cell as detectives told her,
"You can either be a defendant or a witness,"
and that the young nurse
could go to the gas chamber.
Janie hired a well-known attorney out of San Francisco, Marvin Belli, who had gained notoriety defending the murderer of Lee Harvey Oswald, as well as actor Errol Flynn. He called the allegations against Janie inconceivable and set about clearing his client's name. District Attorney Bob Miller's hand was now forced by the daily front-page headlines in the Las Vegas Review-Journal, detailing Janie's alleged role in up to six deaths at the Sunrise Hospital ICU. In a sign of the pressure Miller faced, even Nevada Governor Bob List commented on the death angel allegations.
"I never heard of anything like this in my life. It involves shocking, bizarre allegations. I would like to think the whole thing a figment of somebody's imagination, but there appears to be a good deal of smoke and fire both."
Miller had two available ways to indict Janie Adams for the alleged murders. He could simply file a complaint for murder, which would result in Janie being arrested and brought before a judge for a hearing. It would then be determined as to whether or not the DA had established a sufficient basis to bring the charges. Or Miller could present evidence to the local grand jury and let them make the decision. For the up-and-coming politician, the answer was clear. He'd defer the decision on indictment to the grand jury, knowing full well that the old adage, "a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich," would lead to his desired result. In a sign of the heavy public pressure placed on Miller's office, he scrambled to round up members of the 1979 Clark County Grand Jury because the 1980 Grand Jury had not yet been impaneled. By early April, there was the required number of grand jurors to bring an indictment, and Miller began presenting evidence to support a murder charge in the deaths of Vincent Fraser and Marion Bartlett.
21 witnesses testified before the grand jury,
with multiple nurses who worked with Janie on the graveyard shift admitting that she had a habit of joking about patient deaths. Farrow was among the witnesses who testified that she actually saw Janie shut off Fraser's respirator. And it did nothing to soothe the grand jurors' opinions when they heard testimony that Janie stood over Marion Bartlett and said,
"Come on, Marion, die."
Then there was the compelling testimony of Fraser's widow. Bertha Fraser said that Janie asked her to sign forms deciding which mortuary her husband's body would be sent to the day before he died. She also saw her ailing husband repeatedly pointing to his respirator and shaking in apparent terror. Keep in mind, defense attorneys are not allowed to present evidence or even attend grand jury proceedings, so there was no ability to clarify from the witnesses on cross-examination that Janie was only joking. All told, the grand jury was presented with evidence that Janie had shut off Vincent Fraser's respirator,
that Fraser tried to signal to his wife that something about the respirator made him fearful,
colleagues testified to Janie's routine callousness to her patients,
and co-workers told the grand jury that Janie herself boasted she was
an angel of death. Based on all of that, it's not surprising that the grand jury took only half an hour to return an indictment on an open charge of murder in relation to the death of Vincent Fraser. This meant that Janie could ultimately be found guilty of anything from first-degree premeditated murder to involuntary manslaughter. However, the grand jury refused to return the second indictment in the death of Marion Bartlett, which could have indicated that they may have split the difference when faced with requests from the district attorney for two murder indictments.
"Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples."
"Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious."
"And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted."
"Your Honor, I object."
"Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples."
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Janie Adams voluntarily surrendered herself to the police upon learning of her indictment. She burst into tears when cuffs were placed on her at the commencement of her bail proceeding, at the conclusion of which she was released on $15,000 bail. Her attorney called the murder charges
among the most ridiculous he had ever seen,
and quipped to the Review Journal that,
"We won't be suing you people for a while now."
The day of the bail hearing, District Attorney Bob Miller held a press conference where he detailed to the entire community his allegation that Janey had tampered with the oxygen supply, keeping Vincent Fraser alive. These public statements only further poisoned public attitudes against the young nurse. Janey was stunned to find herself facing capital murder charges, partially because her strong Catholic background led her to place enormous value on human life. But she also compared working in an ICU to the television show MASH. Doctors and nurses faced with critical patients who often died despite their best efforts coped with the emotional toll by resorting to dark humor. While Marvin Belli acted as headliner for the defense, it was local Las Vegas attorney Gary Logan who did the heavy lifting for the defense team. Logan filed a writ of habeas corpus, appealing Janey's indictment to the district court, arguing that the grand jury had indicted Janey based on rank speculation rather than any kind of concrete evidence. Once Janey appeared before Clark County District Court Judge Michael Wendell, it became clear that the district attorney's office had presented a slanted case to the grand jury in order to secure an indictment in the Fraser death. The jurors only saw a fraction of Fraser's thick medical file, and no testimony was presented regarding Fraser's cirrhosis of the liver and peptic ulcers. Most alarming, District Attorney Miller charged Janey with murder for allegedly shutting off Fraser's respirator. But the official cause of death from the county medical examiner was sepsis due to a massive infection. Five doctors at Sunrise certified that Fraser was a terminal patient, and District Judge Wendell noted that a physician correctly predicted in Fraser's file that
the patient would likely die within the next 12 hours.
Adams lost her salary while suspended from her work at Sunrise Hospital pending the conclusion of her criminal case. This forced her to seek work as an EMT for a local ambulance company while awaiting the outcome. After the dismissal of the murder charge, Janey felt unable to return to her former position at Sunrise and endured months of unemployment before finding work at another Las Vegas hospital, which she refused to disclose in an effort to move past the death angel label that continued to plague her. A People magazine article from the time noted that had Adams been convicted, it could have led to an inability of ICU staff to effectively perform their duties. And it's easy to imagine how overzealous and unscrupulous prosecutors could twist the gallows humor common among first responders and medical professionals into the basis for spurious murder charges. In fact, former coworkers who had served alongside Janey at a Tucson ICU vouched for her professionalism when caring for critical patients, and they noted ICU nurses regularly had to adjust oxygen and other vital indicators as part of their job, which could account for why Barbara Farrow thought she saw a routine action as a malicious one. Janey later told the Los Angeles Times,
"I'm still a little bitter about it all, but I'm getting over it."
It seems the motive behind the railroading of Janey Adams was an effort by the district attorney to cover for the publisher of the Las Vegas Review Journal, which had sensationalized gossip of a betting ring and angel of death at Sunrise Hospital. Sunrise Hospital pathologist Daniel Wilkes said this was a case of media malpractice, rushing out scurrilous stories which then resulted in a flimsy indictment to provide the newspaper cover. Not only did District Attorney Miller's prosecutorial abuses nearly destroy the career of a respected nurse, but his actions also cost precious police resources. At the time, Las Vegas only had 11 active homicide detectives, and most were tied up for 2 weeks on the Death Angel wild goose chase. Added to this was the pain that Miller's prosecutorial misjudgment caused to the relatives of Vincent Fraser. After Janey's indictment was handed down, Fraser's widow Bertha told the Associated Press,
"I just hope my husband's death will be avenged. I was beginning to accept his death as fate."
Despite this blatant abuse of prosecutorial discretion, the district attorney who oversaw the efforts to indict Janey Adams went on to become the 26th governor of Nevada. Sunrise Hospital and Janey Adams both demanded the Las Vegas Review Journal issue corrections regarding allegations of a hospital dead pool that speculated on when patients would die. However, the Review Journal held firm. They argued that every time they reported about the alleged Deadpool, they noted that authorities did not have any evidence of such a gambling ring. And during the investigation, the Review Journal felt compelled to issue defensive editorials, arguing they were merely reporting the facts surrounding a police matter that involved a public concern about safety in local hospitals. Janie Adams' story serves as a chilling reminder of just how quickly lives can be upended by the power of an accusation and a rush to judgment. What began as a sensational story of a nurse-turned-killer evolved into a cautionary tale about the consequences of media frenzy and the devastating impact of unfounded allegations. In the end, Janie Adams wasn't the monster she was made out to be, but instead was a victim of a system that very nearly failed to protect the innocent. To learn more about this Las Vegas true crime story and many others, visit mayheminthedesert.com and get yourself acquainted with the darker side of Sin City's history. Sin City Stories, Vegas True Crime, is based on material researched and written by Megan and Anthony Smith and is adapted for podcast, edited, and narrated by Jeff Walker. Sin City Stories, Vegas True Crime, is a co-production of Mayhem in the Desert and Walker New Media. Copyright 2024.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.